This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. Welcome back to the Relic Radio Show. Thanks for joining me again this Tuesday for another hour or so of variety of old-time radio. We're going to start this week with an early episode of Suspense, one titled Will You Make a Bet with Death? First aired November 10th, 1942, and it's a quick, incredible but true, and The Man Who Said Mass. We'll finish off today's show with The Man Called X, and Mr. X Goes to Syria, from December 9th, 1950.
Nighttime, the hushed voice and the prowling step, the stir of nerves at the ticking of the clock, the rescue that might be too late, the crime that is almost committed, mystery and intrigue and dangerous adventures. We invite you to enjoy stories that keep you in suspense. Can a man stake his life against $25,000? Can another and cleverer man track him down like a hunter, stalking his prey and kill him within 5 hours? Can you make a bet with death and win?
For Suspense, tonight we present Will You Make a Bet with Death by John Dixon Carr.
Summer day. There's the beach, bright colored with bathing suits. There's the boardwalk, all straw hats and summer dresses. There's the Ferris wheel and the roller coasters. There is all humanity eating hot dogs and having a good time. And over there, beyond that souvenir shop, is the haunted mill. You get into a little boat. You float through a narrow tunnel into the dark while witches scream. But that fools nobody, does it? There couldn't be any real terror, could there? While the bands are playing and the crowd goes by and...
Ladies and gentlemen, a unique attraction. It hurts me to see you stand there and miss this. Only 10 cents, one dime, the tenth part of a dollar to go through the old haunted mill and get the thrill of your life.
An overstatement, if you ask me. One ticket, please.
Did you say one ticket, lady?
That's right, one ticket. What's the thrill?
Beg pardon, lady?
I said, what's the thrill?
Lady, the gals who come here with their boyfriends don't have to ask that. 10 cents, please, this way and mind the gate.
Thank you.
Step right up, ladies and gentlemen. Get your ticket for the old haunted mill where ghosts will walk and cause the...
Give me some tickets. Hurry.
Just a minute, young fella. I know you want to get into the old haunted mill, but there's plenty of time. How many tickets?
I don't know. You better give me 10.
10 tickets? Do you hear that, ladies and gentlemen? Here's a young fella who likes the old haunted mill so much, he buys 10 tickets.
Don't call everybody's attention. Listen, I've got a better idea. Whatever boat comes after mine,
yeah,
I'll give you an extra dollar to send that boat through empty.
Now, what's the matter, son? The cops ain't after you, are they?
No. It's nothing like that. Will you do it?
Well, let me talk, young fella. Okay, go ahead.
Isn't there an empty boat here?
Well, really? You've got such a great objection to riding in the same boat with me?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean that at all. Don't misunderstand.
Then you better get in if you want to go. This boat's starting to move.
I better sit down.
You certainly had.
Look here, I want to apologize.
That's quite unnecessary. This place is rather childish anyway, isn't it?
Yes, isn't it?
But I've seen everything else, so I may as well see this. Here we go in the dark.
What was that?
One of the ghosts, I imagine. from a machine.
It sounded like him laughing. There isn't anybody on the boat behind us, is there?
Oh, I can't see. It's pitch dark.
Listen, Miss...
My name is Andrews, Betty Andrews. If it's customary to exchange names in a place like this...
Mine's Pendrell. Bob Pendrell.
Did you say Pendrell?
Yes. Do you know it?
Oh, no, not exactly. It's an unusual name, that's all.
I don't want you to think I'm out of my mind, though I very nearly am. But I've got 5 hours to go. Just 5 hours. At the end of that time, either I'll have won $25,000 or else...
Or else?
Or else I'll be dead.
You know, I wish I'd kept you away from this boat.
Well, there's nothing to get alarmed about. For you. I can't tell you much, but I had to tell somebody that or I'd have started yelling. There's just one other thing.
Is there?
In these places, they've usually got little dim-lighted rooms along the way.
Yes,
exhibits
and things.
Yes. Well, when we come to one, I'm going to get out of this boat and hide there. Just don't get alarmed, and don't tell anybody when you go out.
Why should you do that?
I think I see a light ahead.
Well, there is a light, but...
Dim, too. That's all for the good. It's... Yes? We're coming around the corner. Look, I'm going to have company when I get off. A waxed dead man on a pile of straw. Oh, I hope I can stand these noises. Goodbye, Betty Andrews. I wish we'd met at a different time.
Mind the boat!
Here, what are you doing?
Getting off, too.
Don't be an idiot. What's the idea?
You need looking after, Mr. Pendrell. And if we must hide, I suppose this is as good a place as any.
I won't have it.
Quick, there'll be more boats along. Over behind that dead man on the straw. He'll hide us. Hurry.
Go.
Now, Mr. Pendrell, in the queerest place I ever get into, please tell me what this is all about.
I can't tell you.
You said it yourself. If you don't tell somebody, you'll go crazy.
Maybe you're right. It's against the strict terms of the bet. But this is the last day. And I tell you, I can't hold out any longer.
Lower your voice. There's a boat coming.
I wonder if you ever heard of my stepfather, John Destry.
Yes.
I imagine everybody has. He's a millionaire, and I'm not. I'm just a chemist, an analytical chemist. Not very successful. So if I'd had time, if I'd had money, I might have worked out a process that would have... Well, I think it would have helped him in the war.
But he's got money.
Yes, he's got money. Well, my mother died years ago. This Destry's a big, white-haired, fine-looking fella. You'd think butter wouldn't melt in his mouth. He's got an apartment in the East 60s, secretary, I never met her, valet, cook, that kind of thing. Well, he used to invite me there. I wouldn't go. Then he got hold of a book I had to have, a German work on chemicals. So I went. After dinner in that study of his, over the brandy...
My dear Robert, you're quite welcome to the book. Don't mention it. Oh, what do you think of this brandy, by the way?
It's excellent, thanks.
Yes, I thought you'd like it. And now that we're all relaxed, comfortable after dinner, tell me something.
Yes, Mr. Destry?
You hate me, don't you?
Frankly, I do. And always have.
Good. Then you'll be relieved to hear I've always felt the same about you. But tell me something else. Did you ever know me to break my word?
No, I never did. I'll give you that.
I asked you, Robert, because I want to make a little bet with you. That is, if you have the nerve, which I doubt.
Well, I'm afraid I can't afford to make bets.
You were always careless with money, Robert. Well, I've been thrifty. I saw that when your mother was alive. But you can afford to make this bet. Look here. In my desk.
Well?
$25,000, Robert. $25,000 in five $100 bills.
And what would I have to bet against that?
Your life.
What? My life?
There's the money in the drawer. Look at it. What wouldn't you give for that money? What wouldn't you give to have it for this precious work of yours that you're so fond of and that you've failed in... Miserably.
So far, I've failed, yes.
Oh, I've had a fairly good life as lives go. My heart isn't as good as it might be, but doctors say I'll last a little while yet. But before I go, there's one pleasure, one little exquisite thrill for me to experience. I want to commit a murder. Yes, I said a murder. My bet is that I can kill you within 6 months, and that you can't stop me, and that I'll never be punished for it. What do you say? Yes or no?
I believe you mean that.
Of course I mean it.
And just how would you propose to kill me?
Ah, that would be telling.
You know, if I had time to think this thing over...
There's no thinking it over. Now, yes or no?
Yes.
You must need the money badly, Robert.
I do need it. But oddly enough, Mr. Destry, that isn't why I'm doing this.
No?
No. I want to show you can't play the Lord Almighty and get away with it.
Are you challenging me?
Yes.
You don't think I can do it?
I know you can't.
We mustn't get excited, Robert. There will be conditions to the bet, you understand?
What conditions?
First of all, you'll never mention this matter to anyone.
All right. That seems fair enough.
You'll remain within the city limits of New York for 6 months. You'll spend at least 1 hour of every day walking the open streets alone.
All right.
You'll spend at least 1 hour every evening in your own room alone. I may come to see you, or I may not.
Trying to scare me already, are you?
Finally, you'll write out a little note and give it to me. There's pen and paper on the desk in front of you. Write it now.
Let's hear what I have to write before I do anything like that.
You will write, I am a failure.
You can't stop harping on that, can you?
I am a failure, and this was the only way out. I wouldn't have done it otherwise.
A suicide note?
Yes. I intend to use it when I, operate.
And if I won't write it?
Then there's no bet.
All right, I'll do it.
It's now, 9 o'clock. On the night of January the 10th. If you're alive and not in a madhouse...
Does that go into the bargain, too?
Yes. At 9 o'clock on the night of June 10th, given those conditions, you will receive $25,000. Can't you hear the dice rattle, Robert? You're playing with death now.
I know it.
Aren't you going to finish your brandy?
No, thank you.
Oh, then, pour it back into the decanter. You heard me. Pour it back into the decanter. If you were as careful as I am, you wouldn't be where you are now. That's right. Always be thrifty. I can promise you, by the way, that you'll always be perfectly safe as long as you're in this apartment. But that's the only concession I make. Oh, I notice your hands are steady. At the moment. I wonder what they'll be like a month from now.
So you were fool enough to make a bet with John Destry.
Listen, Betty, I want to tell you what else happened the same night. I got on the Fifth Avenue bus and started to look through that book that Destry gave me. It was a book that I wanted about poisons. Well, just as I opened it, I felt something sharp prick my fingers. I looked down, and my hands were covered with blood. He had sewn safety razor blades in a line down the inside edge of the cover.
Oh, no!
Yeah. A little white card fell out of the book, and I read it. It said... See how easy it is to take you off guard? Those razor blades aren't poisoned, but they might have been. Take warning. Betty, that was 6 months ago. 6 months less 5 hours of careful, refined torture. And now, I've got only 5 hours to go.
What's he done in the meantime?
Nothing.
Nothing? I don't understand.
Nothing at all. That's the cleverness of it. He's left me waiting, waiting, waiting.
Expecting something.
Expecting it every hour of the day or night. Once at the laboratory where I work, I opened a box that I thought was from a chemical supply house. And a Mexican tarantula, one of those furry spiders about as big as your fist, ran out across my hand. It was a toy tarantula. He enclosed a card, asking whether I didn't admire it.
Bob, this can't go on.
I used to think I didn't have a nerve in my body. I could hold a test tube at arm's length, absolutely steady, for minutes at a time. Now look at me.
Don't, please, don't.
But the waiting's almost over now. Walking the streets, wondering who's behind you. Sitting alone at night, listening for every step on the stair. He's got very little time left now, and he's got to do something. The question is, what's he going to do?
Well, maybe he doesn't mean it. Maybe he's only doing it to scare you.
And lose all that money? Oh, you don't know my stepfather.
Listen.
Huh? I don't hear anything.
That's just it. There's no sound of running water. The boats have stopped.
Then we're all by ourselves in here. Or with him.
Yes.
Oh, Lord, how I wish I hadn't gotten you into this.
Oh, I'm all right. Or at least I think I am.
I thought I saw him in the crowd outside, but I couldn't be sure. I'm seeing him everywhere.
Now, Bob, just a minute. Just tell me one more thing. Did you ever see Mr. Destry, I mean face to face, after that first night?
Oh, many times.
He came to see you?
He came to my laboratory once, yes, but mostly I went to see him. And why? Because it was the only place in the world I could feel safe.
He's promised that nothing should happen to you while you were in his apartment.
Don't you see? It was part of the torture. Night after night, he'd invite me. And I'd go. Right up until last night. Last night. We were in that study of his. With the devil masks on the walls. And he was sitting behind the big mahogany desk.
My dear Robert, I'm pleased and even touched to have you here on the last night before you...
Why don't you say die and get it over with?
Oh, well, let's not say die.
No?
The clergy contend that we never die. We only change. Now, let that be a consolation for you. Must you be going so early?
There's that 1 hour at home rule to our bet, if you remember.
I remember. You're keeping to the rule.
Yes, and I mean to beat you at this if it's the last thing I ever do.
The last thing I ever do? That's an unfortunate choice of phrase, Robert. My boy, you haven't a chance. Something's going to happen to you within the next 24 hours when you least expect it.
Will you answer me one question?
If I choose.
Have you decided how you mean to kill me?
I decided that 6 months ago.
And you still think you can get away with it?
It's a method which has never been known to fail. I give you my word of honor on that.
Is it sudden?
Yes, and no. Wouldn't you like to know what it is?
Good night, Mr. Destry. I think I'd better be leaving.
No, my dear boy, you mustn't go yet. Sit down. Pour yourself a glass of brandy.
No, thanks.
Then perhaps you wouldn't mind pouring me a little. My doctor allows brandy, though I'm forbidden spirits. I notice your hands are shaking quite a good deal. They weren't like that 6 months ago, were they? No. You were full of confidence then.
Oh.
And it grieves me to see you waste tobacco by lighting a cigarette and putting it out immediately.
Oh, it's no use lying to you. But I'm going to beat you just the same.
You wouldn't like to back out now?
After what I've been through?
You'd still have your life.
I'll keep it, thanks.
That's very unwise of you, Robert. Still, you must decide. Oh, I was expecting my secretary a little later to dictate some letters. But now, I think I'll leave her a message that I've gone to bed and turn in myself. Tomorrow is likely to prove an interesting day for both of us. Here's your hat, here's your briefcase, and let me wish you a fond, peaceful, and happy good night.
That was last night, Betty. I said I had 5 hours to go.
It's less than 4 hours now.
If I can keep away from the old devil until 9 o'clock.
I wish those boats would start running again.
Why?
Because it's almost as spooky in here as a real old mill.
I know.
Even that whack dummy on the straw. Any minute now.
You're expecting to see him move? So am I.
Now, don't stand up.
It doesn't matter. If the boats aren't running, we can hear anybody who comes along.
I hope so.
Do you think Destry's got in?
Bobby can't have got in. He can't even be here.
Why not?
Because Mr. Destry told me.
Mr. Destry told you?
I'm his secretary.
You know, Betty Andrews, I'm sorry it was you who did this.
Did what?
You can't guess, can you?
Oh, Bob, I didn't come here to trap you or spy on you. If that's what you're thinking, I swear I didn't.
No. You only got me to tell you the whole story and lose my bet.
I haven't heard a single word you said. Bob, please believe that.
He didn't send you here, of course.
No, no.
And of course you never saw me at his apartment last night.
No, I swear I didn't. I got there late. He'd gone to bed. I didn't even take off my hat or gloves before I left again. Don't you understand, Bob? I hate him, too. I want to see you beat him. You've got to beat him.
You mean that?
Look at me and see if I mean it.
Betty, I almost believe you.
You must believe me. And?
Anything else?
We better hide behind that dead man in a hurry. Those boats have started up again.
I wish I could tell you, Betty, what that means to me.
Come on, hurry.
Wait a minute, you two.
But
stay just where you are.
Where's that voice coming from?
Along the tunnel, I think.
But it's not Destry's voice.
No, it's a man standing up in a boat. He's coming around the corner. I can see him now. Hurry.
The old haunted mill, eh? My golly, if this ain't some place to make a pinch, I never heard of one.
What do you mean? Make a pinch.
Just what I said. Your name, Robert Penrill?
Yes. Who are you and what do you want?
Police headquarters. You're to come along with me. I want to see you over in New York.
About what?
I wouldn't know, lady, but it might be about the murder of John Destry.
Oh, no!
Did you say the murder of John Destry?
That's right. Somebody poisoned him last night with mercury cyanide. I wouldn't have got you at all, maybe, if the barker outside there hadn't thought the cops were after you to start with.
Betty.
Yes, Bob?
He's beaten me.
He hasn't beaten you.
Oh, yes, he has. And I know now the weapon Destry was going to use in killing me.
What weapon?
It never fails. The electric chair.
You mustn't talk like that.
Don't you see? He never once intended to kill me in the way I thought.
Are you coming quietly, Mr. Pendle?
Just a minute.
He's poisoned himself. But he's left evidence to show I did it. He's killing me the worst way possible. He's won the bet. The money doesn't matter now. If I'm in the death house for murder, what use have I got for all the money in the world?
Let me introduce myself. My name's Mullen, Inspector Mullen.
It's a pleasure to meet you, Inspector. It's a pleasure to be safe again.
I've had you brought here to my office for a little quiet talk. You're in a jam, son, and I want you to realize how bad it is.
You think I don't realize it?
John Destry was poisoned with mercury cyanide administered in a glass of brandy.
And only my fingerprints were on the glass besides his own. I can guess.
Mr. Destry's body was found this morning lying behind the desk in the study. There was an empty glass with traces of brandy and cyanide. Now, we haven't had the full autopsy report, but the smell of that stuff is pretty distinctive. Tell me, you're a chemist, Mr. Penderell.
That's right.
The boys find that 8 grains of mercury cyanide are missing from your laboratory.
Where he visited me a month ago.
And in your briefcase, which you took away from his apartment last night.
He handed it to me. I remember.
We found over $1,000 in cash. Now, take a look at this note. You ever see it before?
Look. Yes. I wrote it.
You admit that?
Yes.
It says, I was a failure and this was the only way out. I wouldn't have done it otherwise.
Where did you find it?
Torn up in little bits. You started to write a confession and then you couldn't face the consequences. But you shouldn't have left the pieces behind. You're intimate, my boy. Unless...
Unless what?
Now, if you'd like to confess here and now, and maybe we did a little deal about second-degree murder,
Inspector, why bother to string me along?
What do you mean, string you along?
There's no second-degree murder on a poison charge. It's the death house and nothing. He saw to that.
It's Too bad you had to go and kill him, son. Didn't you know he had an aneurysm?
A what?
Fatal heart disease.
He said that he had heart trouble, but...
Heart trouble? His doctor says he couldn't have lived 8 or 10 months anyway. And you might have got something in the will.
So that's why he did it.
Did what?
Killed himself.
You still stick to that crazy story you told the boy?
He's going to kill me, isn't he? With 3,000 volts of electricity.
Inspector Mullen.
What are you doing here, Sergeant? Didn't I say I wasn't to be disturbed?
All the same, Inspector. I thought I'd better do it. There's a young lady here, a Miss Betty Andrews. I think you'd better see her.
I'll see her when I'm good and ready.
And I think you'd better see her, Inspector. We've just heard from Mr. Destry's lawyer.
Well?
He said that that young fellow there, Mr. Pendrell, inherits $25,000 in Mr. Destry's new will.
Did you hear that, son? Do you see what you'd have gotten if you hadn't gone and killed him?
He was keeping his promise, that's all. A fine lot of good it'll do me now.
But look, Inspector, I've just talked to the medical examiner, and he says there's no poison in Mr. Destry's body.
Say that again?
There's no poison in the old man's body.
Somebody's kidding you. An empty glass with the smell of mercury cyanide and a dead man with a congested face behind the mask? What did kill him then?
Well, if you'd like to listen to Miss Andrews, Inspector, she's right here now.
I think you'd better listen, Inspector. I've been trying to tell you all afternoon.
Go ahead, Miss Andrews.
I've been over and over it. And until they got the medical report, nobody would listen.
Can you tell us what killed John Destry?
Yes. Poison killed him.
But the sergeant's just been saying there was no poison in the body.
Inspector, will you listen? I was at Mr. Destry's apartment late last night.
Well, so what? You didn't kill him, did you?
The servant said he'd gone to bed. So I looked into the study to see if there were any instructions.
Was Mr. Destry dead then?
I don't know. I couldn't see his body because it was hidden behind the desk. I didn't even learn he was dead until late this afternoon. But I did see a full glass of brandy.
A full glass, did you say?
Yes. So I picked up the glass and poured the brandy back into the decanter. That's what he always made us do. And I didn't leave any fingerprints because I was still wearing my gloves. And that was the same glass you later found empty.
But you still are not telling us what was the poison that killed John Destry.
It was the poison in his own system. He worked out this plot to convict Bob Pendrell. Only just as he stretched out his hand to drink the cyanide...
Inspector, I think I see it. It was his last great hour. He couldn't resist such gloating as he'd never known before.
That's it. His heart wouldn't stand it. And he fell dead behind the desk. And I think, if you study the expression on his face, you'll find he died laughing.
And so ends Will You Make a Bet with Death. Tonight's story of suspense. The part of Bob Pendrell was played by Michael Fitzmaurice. Betty was played by Leslie Woods. John Destry was played by Nicholas Joy. And in supporting roles were Ted DeCorsia and Charles Slattery. Again next Tuesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Wartime, a story dedicated to the thrill of the nighttime, the hushed voice, and the prowling step. Another adventure in suspense. William Spear, the producer, Mark Slobe, the director in the absence of John Dietz, and John Dixon Carr, the author, our collaborators on suspense.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
In the little town of Neston in Cheshire, England, Theresa Higginson is well remembered. For it was she who had an experience so remarkable that it has made her name immortal among her fellow townsmen.
Father Donahue, the priest of Neston's church, was called away to London at least 4 times a year. So Theresa Higginson's title was more than honorary. Hers was the responsibility of seeing to it that the Holy Church remained inviolate. Consequently, she was rather startled when Father Donahue summoned her to him and inquired,
"When I'm in London, Teresa, whom do you permit to enter the church?"
"Why, nobody, Father, nobody at all."
"That is what I was afraid of. There are certain persons who should not be kept out of the church if they wish to enter it. There's Father Mooney of Wickham. If perchance he should come while I'm away, it's quite possible that he might wish to go in for a while and say Mass.
It was just 3 weeks later that Father Donahue departed for London. Neston's church rested on a rather high hill at the very outskirts of town. A gravel path ran from the road up to its doors. And it was there that Teresa Higginson met the strange priest.
He must be Father Mooney of Wickham. Good morning to you, Father Mooney.
But the man did not reply. Instead, he pointed a bony finger at the keys that were tightly clutched in Teresa's hand. And then he pointed the same finger at the door of the church.
He must want to go in.
The man was obviously familiar with the layout of the building. He made his way unhesitatingly into the sacristy.
Well, he must be Father Mooney. Who else would know his way around here?
It was not until after the ceremony had ended and the priest had returned to the sacristy to dispose of his vestments that she began to wonder again. For time passed. 10 minutes, 15, a half hour, and he did not reappear. At length, she stepped into the small, gloomy room. The vestments were there, but the man who had worn them had vanished.
He couldn't have. There's only one door to this room, and I was standing outside of it the whole time.
On the evening of the following day, Father Donahue returned from his visit to London.
Why didn't you tell me he was such a queer one, Father?
Who, my dear?
This Father Mooney. He was here while you were gone.
But that's impossible, Teresa. Father Mooney was in London.
Well, then who did I see here? Who did I let into the church? Oh, he was a priest, all right. But I never saw such a strange-looking one. An old man he was, and all bent over with a horrible humpback.
You say he was hunchbacked?
Aye, that he was.
And he was an old man?
Aye. Why do you ask, Father?
Because there was a priest here once. He was an old man, and a hunchback.
No wonder he knew the place inside and out. But what's his name, do you know?
His name was Father Keller. He's been dead for 50 years. His body is buried in the graveyard behind the church.
There were those, of course, in Neston who said that Teresa Higginson either lied or else she dreamed the whole affair. But there were others, and they included most of the townspeople who knew Teresa too well to do anything but accept her word. They simply accepted the incident as an incident incredible but true.
Herbert Marshall as the man called X. Wherever there is mystery, intrigue, romance, in all the strange and dangerous places of the world, there you will find the man called X. But first, listen for a moment to America's famous singing star.
And now, here's Bing Baggy Pants Crosby.
Oh, yeah. And that type of introduction's entirely uncalled for.
Well, I'm sorry, Bing, but your clothes are a little rumpled tonight.
A little rumpled. Yeah. Look, I can tell you why. I had a very rough train trip up from Los Angeles. Yeah. I had a horrible experience. I shared an upper berth with Bob Hope. That's the last time I ever get stuck in a berth with groaning Lisa.
Why did you have to have Hope in the berth with you?
He broke out of his crate. Let's move along to something musical, huh?
Chesterfield, Chesterfield, always wins first place. That milder, mild tobacco never leaves an aftertaste.
So open a pack, give them a smell.
Then you'll smoke them.
Don't forget to give Crosby for Christmas. Yes, give Chesterfield Christmas cartons with Bing as Papa Santa Claus. It happened on a moonless night near a peaceful oasis on the vast South Arabian desert. One moment, the small, well-piloted plane was coming in for a quiet, uneventful landing. And the next... The following morning, the pilot of that plane lies in a hospital room in Beirut, Syria.
Arabs. That line. They... Ken... You still here, Ken?
I'm here, Jack. Go on, yes.
Guns. Somebody's smuggling guns. Explosives. Can't let them, Ken. Can't let them destroy Tapline.
Who's behind it, Jack? Who's smuggling these guns into the Arabs? Who's after the Tapline?
mud. Red mud.
What about red mud?
Red mud. Stop, McCann. Stop.
Jack. Okay, Jack. I'll see what I can do.
Oh!
Looking for someone?
Oh, why, yes. I was looking for the room of Mr. Jack Buckley.
You might find that easier by looking for the room numbers above the doors, not by leaning against them.
Oh, yes, I see.
What did you want with Jack, Miss...
Anzia. Marilee's Anzia. I'm Jack's fiancée. I have just heard of his accident and I... But you have just been in his room. Tell me, how is he?
I'm sorry, Miss Anzia.
So he is dead. Jack is dead. So young, so much to live for. And now he has been killed by the hand of fate.
That's one way of putting it, Miss Anzia.
What do you mean?
Somebody pumped two bullets into his back.
So that's why Jack Buckley wired you to go to Beirut, Ken. Somebody's after the tap line, eh?
Looks like it, Chief. They're apparently smuggling in arms and explosives to some maverick Arab tribes, expecting them to do the dirty work for them.
But good Lord, Ken, that Trans-Arabian oil pipeline is vital to us.
It's vital to the whole Western Hemisphere, Chief. When somebody said that oil is the lifeblood of democracy these days, he wasn't kidding.
Right. So what are we going to do about it? That pipeline runs through 1,000 miles of desert. How can we even start to protect it?
You can start by tipping off the Saudi Arabian government. They'll put some men to work on it.
What about you, Ken?
Oh, I'll just relax here in Beirut at the government house bar until Pagon arrives.
Pagon?
Yes. Miss Brooks told me he was in the waiting room there when my call came through. I'll give 8 to 5 he's listening in on an extension phone right now.
If he is, I'll wring his eavesdropping neck for him.
Better hold it until he gets back, Chief. I can use him here.
What in the world could you possibly use Zelschmidt for?
This is a plenty dirty deal we're mixed up in. And some of the worst scum on earth are right here in Beirut. I can't think of anybody more at home in this situation than Pagon.
Thank you, Mr. Thurston.
You are, Thurston Effendi. A martini with onion.
Thank you. Keep the change.
1,000 thanks, Effendi. 1,000 thanks.
Very, very funny. Waiter. Oh, waiter.
Yes, Edwards, Effendi.
Scotch and soda for the young lady and myself. Your best scotch, you understand?
Yes, Effendi.
A burra peg for you, Hassan.
A burra peg, Stephen, if you please.
It's not what I please, Hassan. You're the one who has to drink this filthy stuff. That right, Marilee?
Stephen, darling, on such a wonderful evening as this, I could not disagree with anyone about anything. Not with Hassan over his burra peg. Nor with Mr. Thurston over the onion in his martini.
I was wondering if you remembered me, Miss Anzia.
How could I forget, considering the circumstances under which we met? I should like to have you meet two friends of mine, Stephen Edwards and Hassan Alkar. Gentlemen, this is Mr. Ken Thurston.
How do you do?
How are you?
American, eh, Thurston?
That's right, Edwards.
I suppose you're in the oil business.
In a way, yes.
And your recommendations are complete. You're in oil, you're a friend of the delectable Marilee's. And I'm sure you'll be delighted to attend a house party I'm giving at Merzwa.
Merzwa?
Yes.
A large oasis in the Saudi Arabian desert, Mr. Thurston. Stephen has a home there. It has become a mecca for those interested in oil.
Oh.
Yes, a quite democratic one, too. Stephen has entertained all classes, from King Ibn Saud down to lowly construction engineers such as Jack Buckley.
I see.
Well, will you join us at Misra?
That'll depend on how some business turns out for me here.
Suit yourself, Thurston.
Your drinks are ready, Edwards Effendi.
Good. We'll have them at that table in the corner. Come on, Marilee's, Hassan. This place gets more depressing by the minute.
Of course, Stephen, darling. I do hope you will be able to make it to Misra, Ken. I think you will find it most interesting there.
Yeah?
And I should like to express my hope to see you there, Mr. Thurston. Also, to add a slight note of warning.
Warning?
Yes. One must beware of mirages on the desert. Please do not disregard them as did Jack Buckley. You see, he was flying to Mirzwa when the accident occurred.
Hello?
I should like to speak with Monsieur Ken Thurston, please.
This is Ken Thurston.
Ah, so I have found you in your hotel room at last, monsieur. Well, allow me to inform you, Monsieur Thurston, that under no circumstances will you be allowed to get away with this outrageous swindle.
Swindle?
What else would you call this bare-faced attempt to bring 500 empty brass watch cases into Beirut?
Brass watch case? Just who are you, anyway?
My name is Norbert. Lucien Norbert. French Customs Office.
Ah, that explains it.
It does not explain anything to me, monsieur.
Are you in your office, Norbert?
That is correct.
Good. Then just hang on to Pagan Zellschmidt until I get there.
But there's nothing to get all excited about, Mr. X. It's all just one big happy mistake.
Oh, sure.
Oh, sure. After all, this Arabian desert is pretty tough on watches. Yeah. All that sand and stuff and sand. Well, so in case something happened to mine, I brought just a few spare cases.
500 of them.
So I'm not an optimist.
You were optimist enough to ship them under my name, Pagan, and figure you could peddle them to the Arabs with good American watches. Now, it's lucky that Norbert latched onto them.
Well, Monsieur Thurston, your receipt for the fine and for the duty paid on the watch cases.
Give it to Zellschmidt, Monsieur Norbert.
To me? What do I want it for this?
You'll be paying for it out of your salary.
Mr. Thurston.
I trust that this will be a lesson to you, monsieur. An example of our alertness to all attempts at smuggling.
You do all right with watches, Norbert, but what about guns, ammunition, high explosives?
And what is your interest in all this, Monsieur Thurston?
I'm interested in oil, Norbert. Pipeline oil.
Ah. Oui, I understand.
So?
I would not know of this smuggling of firearms, monsieur, officially.
And unofficially?
Oh, what would you do, monsieur? We are badly undermanned. There are many long kilometers of uninhabited coastline. On any dark night, a ship could move into shore undetected.
Yeah.
Its cargo could be picked up by plane. There are natural landing fields near practically every large oasis.
What about Merzwa?
It has a private field owned by Monsieur Stephen Edwards.
Uh-huh.
And this may be of interest to you, Monsieur Thurston. Not far from that landing field is one of the tap line's main pumping stations.
Makes it a bit awkward, Thurston, this late decision of yours to come to my party at Merzwa.
Does it?
Yes, the plane I'm flying is already filled up. But I have another one here in Beirut you can fly out yourself, if you want to tackle it.
Why not?
Good. There's radio to clear the field when you're set to come in, and we'll welcome you with open arms and a raised glass.
You know something, Mr. X? I think I should have stood in New York. I don't like flying around all over this desert sand and at night yet.
Don't worry about it, Pagan. They've told us at Beirut that Edwards Field is well equipped with lights.
Those jokers. What do they know about anything anyways? 5 hours it took them to put a couple of nuts and bolts in this flying junk heap.
It had a cracked manifold.
If they knew their business, they could have pasted it up or something.
Cheer up, Pagan. We should almost be there. I'll see if I can raise them. This is Thurston calling Edwards at Merzwell. Thurston to Merzwell. Can you read me? Over.
We read you loud and clear, Thurston. We can hear your engine, too. You must be close enough to start setting down.
You could fool me, Edwards. We can't see a thing from up here.
I'll have the landing lights turned on. There's no wind and plenty of runway, so you shouldn't have any trouble. Happy landings. Over and out.
We're falling, we're falling.
Oh, relax, you idiot. We're only going in for a landing.
Landing on what? Who can see anything down there in all that blackness?
There are the lights now. And the runway's right between them.
Ooh, ooh.
Now, hang on to your hat. We're going in.
Ooh,
ooh. Take it easy. The wheels will be touching any second. Then we cut. Hang on, Pagan. Something's wrong.
We will continue with The Man Called X in just a moment. Here's a word from RCA Victor. Only 12 shopping days left till Christmas. But that's not bothering America's snappiest families. They need only one day to select the greatest family gift in history. An RCA Victor complete home entertainment combination. They are pooling their dreams and their money to buy the gift that keeps on giving and giving and giving. Giving not just to one, but to all. Giving not just a day, but every hour, every day, every year. Giving not just RCA Victor radio or recorded music or television, but all three combined in one magnificent cabinet. Why don't you join together and agree this minute to meet each other next Monday at your RCA Victor dealers to choose your matchless RCA Victor radio phonograph television combination? You'll find it costs far less than you'd pay for each instrument separately. You'll find that your RCA Victor combination is the greatest gift each of you ever made to the year-round happiness of all of you. Now, Act Two of The Man Called X, starring Herbert Marshall, with Leon Belasco as Pagan Zellschmidt.
Pagan? You okay? Pagan.
Go away, don't bother me.
Huh?
I just found an angel who's a sucker for empty brass watch cases.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Pagan, you're not dead yet.
I'm not? But after that crash, I gotta be.
That's what somebody else thought. Come on. Let's get out of here.
What happened anyways?
Somebody threw us a curve.
Huh? Hey, what kind of a runway is this? Nothing but sand.
That's right.
But the custom guy, that Lucien Norbert, said there was a good landing field in Mirzwa.
There probably is, but this isn't Mirzwa.
Please, Mr. X, don't be playing 64 questions with me.
I told you someone threw a curve at Pagan by stringing portable landing lights out in the middle of the desert.
But what kind of a joker would do a thing like that? Don't he know he could kill somebody that way?
He knew it, Pagan.
Then why did he... Oh, Mr. X.
Let's start walking. I think we'll find the rest of the answers at Mirzwa. That's right, Edwards.
What happened? Where's your plane? Why didn't you come into the field?
Go ahead, Mr. Thurston. Go ahead. Tell him a couple of things or two, will you?
If you didn't know what happened to us, how come you're out in the desert with that half-track?
I was worried about you.
Oh.
Yes, the lights on my field had shorted and I couldn't get them on. When I tried to call you back, my radio was dead.
Pretty convenient coincidence, wasn't it?
I'm not sure I know what you're talking about, Thurston, but I am sure I don't like the way you say it.
And I don't like to be murdered, Edwards.
Murdered?
You wouldn't happen to have any portable landing light gear at Mirzwa, would you?
As a matter of fact, I did have, but it was stolen.
Before or after Jack Buckley's plane crashed?
Before, but I failed to see...
And that plane he cracked up in, was it one of yours? Was he trying to land at Mirzwa when he crashed?
Now, look here, Thurston. You're right about all of these things, but I'll be hanged if I'm going to stand here and be cross-examined about... Wait a minute. Are you trying to say that you cracked up, too? And you think that somebody used fake landing lights in order to get both of...
You're doing all right, Edwards. Why stop now?
I will see that you're flown back to Beirut in the morning.
What's the matter? Afraid something might happen if I stick around?
No, but apparently you are. And who knows, Thurston? You may be right. I did promise you a drink when you arrived at Mirzwa, Thurston. If you care to join me, I'll be in the bar.
Make mine a triple scotch, Mr. Edwards.
Sorry, Pagan. You've got work to do.
Work?
I want you to snoop around here, talk to the servants, learn whatever you can about smuggling, particularly arms and ammunition.
But, Mr. Rick...
Get started, Pagan.
But...
Your plane crashed in accidental landing, Thurston. How unfortunate.
Yes, wasn't it?
The only trouble, Hassan, is that our unappreciative guest doesn't think it was an accident.
But what else could it have been, Stephen?
Ask Thurston. He's the one with a suspicious mind.
Let's skip it, Meredith. Maybe that crash shook me up a little too much. Maybe I'm seeing things around there.
A change of heart, Thurston, or a cover-up?
They're your questions, Edwards. What do you think?
Here's your drink. That discharges my duties as a host. One of the servants will show you to your room when you're ready to retire.
Aren't you being a little rude, Stephen?
A matter of definition, my dear. Let's go to the game room, Hassan.
Of course, Stephen. Though I do regret Thurston's involvement in this unfortunate matter. It was to be expected, however.
Was it, Hassan?
It is only natural that Western strangers run into difficulties when they attempt to pry into Middle East affairs. I'll see you later, Thurston.
Yeah.
Coming, Marilys?
Stephen, I feel badly about...
Are you coming, Marilys?
Yes, Stephen, of course.
Good night, Thurston.
Ken, there is a fountain at the rear of the gardens. Meet me there in 10 minutes.
Huh?
Because you are right, Ken. Someone did try to murder you, as they murdered Jack Buckley. And I can tell you who that someone is. Sorry to be late, Ken. Stephen is in an ugly mood. It took me longer to get away than I had thought.
I don't mind waiting. If you can tell me who killed Buckley and why.
I can tell you, Ken. Though I am not certain that I'm going to.
No, why not?
It might place my life in danger, too.
You knew that when you arranged this little meeting.
I think it only fair that I be paid for the risk I take.
Huh. So that's it.
What else did you think it could be, darling?
How much, Meredith?
$10,000.
Whoa. You don't come cheap, do you?
Building the tap line wasn't cheap either. Well, Kate?
No dice, Marilys.
Aren't you being rather foolish, darling?
Maybe, but I'd hate to pay out that money and then find that you were the person after me.
Airplane garage anyways, Mr. Thurston.
Well, I wanted to see what kind of planes Edward was flying out here.
So you're finding out. So what?
So he's got 4 DC-3s, transport planes, heavy cargo carriers.
Ha! Could they carry us back to Beirut?
They could also carry arms and ammunition, Pagan. And look here. Look at the mud caked on those landing wheels. Red mud. And Jack Buckley said something about red mud just before... Now. Come on, Pagan.
Going somewhere, Thurston?
Hassan, what are you doing out here?
I thought I was going to take a quiet stroll before retiring, but those shots rather upset my plans.
I don't suppose you know who fired them.
It was not I, Thurston, if that's what you are thinking. But I did see some shadowy figure slip away in the darkness.
Ah.
You have had your share of difficulties out here, haven't you? Strange that others do not share the same troubles.
What are you driving at?
I was merely referring to the pilot of that plane. He's coming in for a landing. And this time the landing field lights seem to be working perfectly.
Good news for me, Norbert.
Oui, Monsieur Thurston. That is so. Those who were smuggling arms into the Arabs have been apprehended. A small group of illegal operators in Beirut. So you need have no further concern. Your troubles are over.
Very considerate of you to fly to Mercer with the news, Norbert. You could have radioed me.
Ah, but I did not come here merely for that, Monsieur. I am on duty for the Customs Department.
Huh?
Oui, the captured men revealed that they have a cache of arms and ammunition at Le Lac Rouge.
Le Lac Rouge?
Mm-hmm. A small oasis some 15 miles from here. It supplies water to one of the tap line pumping stations.
How come it's called the Red Lake, Norbert?
Oh, the color of the water, monsieur, caused by some chemical in the soil. The entire shore is of red mud.
How about it, Norbert? You willing to let us fly to Lac Rouge with you?
Well, I don't know, Monsieur Edward.
But we are all getting bored with each other's company here, Monsieur Norbert. Hassan, Stephen, and I. Besides, this way you will have some company on a lonesome task.
Ah, well, I have never been able to refuse the desires of a beautiful woman, mademoiselle. But what of you, Monsieur Thurston?
Edward has a plane ready for me, Norbert, to fly back to Beirut. Now that you've got things under control, why should I stick around?
Boy, am I glad to be going back to Beirut.
We are not heading for Beirut, Pedro.
Huh? What do you mean we're not? Mr. X, it's counting up on us. We're going to crash again. We're going to crash.
Not this time. You're just going in for a dead stick landing.
Landing? Landing where?
On a natural landing field near the shores of Le Lac Rouge.
But this isn't any lake, Mr. X.
That's right. It's one of the tap line's pumping stations.
Pumping stations? What are we going to do at the...
Hold it, Pagan.
Huh? What is it, Mr. Thurston?
Look over there, near the main piston shaft.
Near the... Mr. X?
Yeah.
What's going on over there?
A little plan to blow up this pumping station.
To blow up? Let's get out of here, Mr. X.
No hurry. Let's talk it over first.
Talk it over?
Yeah. Need any help with that nitroglycerin?
Thurston.
That's right, Norbert. Sorry if I startled you. I wouldn't want you to drop any of those nitro bottles prematurely.
But what are you doing here?
Putting an end to your plan to destroy the tap line.
Mr. X, you mean this no-good customer is the one we're after?
That's right, Pagan. Some country was paying him off to wreck the tap line. But when his gang was caught in Beirut, he came out here himself to make one last desperate play to blow up this station.
Hey, wait a minute, Mr. X. This guy wasn't even at Mirzwa when we crashed. And he couldn't have taken those shots at us.
No, but his Arab friends could, and they did. They rigged the lights on us and shorted Edward's radio and landing field. Just as they did to Jack Buckley. What happened, Norbert? Did Buckley learn about your scheme?
Oui. You're quite correct in everything you have said, Monsieur Thurston. Unfortunately, you will not be able to take me back with you.
Mr. X, he grabbed one of those bottles of TNT.
Yes, I am about to leave now. And I would not advise your shooting to stop me. If you try, we will all be blown up. Perhaps my last desperate gamble did not work. But we have plenty of time, Monsieur Thurston. The winning of an entire world is worth waiting for.
He's gone, Mr. Rex. He's gone. We gotta do something. We gotta do something.
No hurry, Pagan.
But he's got that explosion stuff with him. Maybe he'll use it now to blow us up. Maybe he'll... Mr. Rex. What was that?
I told there was no hurry. Hassan's bullet took care of that nitro. And Norbert.
Hassan's bullet? But what did Hassan have to do with this?
That's what the French and the Arabian governments pay him to do, Pagan.
You mean he's a Desert G-man?
That's right. He and I arranged this little get-together before leaving Mirzwa.
Well, what do you know? So I guess we show that no-good crook Norbert where he gets off at.
Ah, it's not Norbert who bothers me so much. It's Edwards and all those like him.
Edwards?
Yes. We can protect ourselves against the Norberts of this world. But we can't protect ourselves against the selfish and the blind who put their own personal interests above those of freedom. That's where the real danger to democracy lies. We've got to learn that. All of us.
Now, here is our star, Mr. Herbert Marshall.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the hustle and bustle of your Christmas shopping, have you stopped to realize that there are children who may not receive any Christmas presents this year? Now, you can do something about this by sending a new or used toy to the groups in your own town that are distributing gifts to less fortunate children. Help brighten a child's Christmas by sending a toy to your local groups. And thanks for being with us. Next week, Mr. X goes to the Belgian Congo with Leon Belasco along as chief headhunter, Pagan Zellschmidt. So join us, won't you, when next I return as the man called X. Good night.
The Man Called X is a J. Richard Kennedy production with music composed and conducted by Felix Mills. Tonight's story was written by Sidney Marshall. All characters and incidents on this program are fictitious, and any resemblance to actual characters or incidents is purely coincidental. The Man Called X, starring Herbert Marshall, and Dangerous Assignment, starring Brian Donlevy, have been brought to you by the makers of Anacin for fast relief from pain of headaches, neuritis, and neuralgia. By Chesterfield, the only cigarette that combines mildness with no unpleasant aftertaste. By your local Ford dealer, who is now displaying the new 1951 Ford, the car that's built for the years ahead. And by RCA Victor, world leader in radio, first in recorded music, first in television. Be sure to listen tomorrow evening for The Big Show with Tallulah Bankhead and A Great Parade of Stars, the Sunday night feature of NBC's All-Star Festival. And until next week, same time and station, this is Jack Latham saying good night for The Man Called X. Hear your hit parade next on NBC.
That's the Relic Radio show for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. Find more at relicradio.com, where you'll also find a link to the forum, our Shoutcast stream, and everything else. You're more than welcome, by the way, to join that forum. There's always an interesting discussion going on, and sometimes it's even about old-time radio. You can find that at forum.relicradio.com. If you'd like to email me, the email address is relicradio@gmail.com. You can follow the shows on Twitter at twitter.com/relicradio. Thanks for joining me today. I'll talk to you again next week for another episode of the Relic Radio Show.